RVFTA's Campground of the Week is sponsored by Jayco. To view their complete line of RVs, visit jayco.com. And by Progressive Insurance. Get an RV policy quote by calling 1-800-PROGRESSIVE or visiting progressive.com/RV.
America the Beautiful. There is adventure to be found around every corner.
And there is no better way to explore it than by staying at one of our country's 14,000 campgrounds.
Our team of correspondents will guide you to the best places to park your rig or pitch your tent.
On each week's episode, we'll give a complete review of one campground, location, activities, amenities, best sites, and tons of other insider intel.
Plus, we'll talk about regional highlights, food, culture, attractions, family fun, and all things great outdoors.
From the East Coast to the West Coast, and from the Great Lakes to the Mississippi Delta, it's time to hit the open road with RVFTA's Campground of the Week. Northeast correspondents are Jeremy and Stephanie Puglisi, the co-hosts of the RV Family Travel Atlas and Campground of the Week podcasts, and the authors of The Idiot's Guide to RV Vacations, and they do a bunch of other stuff too. Welcome to the show, Stephanie.
Well, thank you so much, Jeremy. It is great to be here after doing a holiday at the campground.
It is. And this is like, we just got home from this campground and we're reviewing it. So it's all so fresh in mind. So I'm kind of excited because I just feel like it's all right there.
Yeah. And this is on our first time at the campground. So it's kind of like always that nice, like, okay, you know, the first time at a campground, you get all the basics. And then the second time you kind of revisit your thoughts and, you know, seal the deal.
Like, for instance, this time we discovered the campground's twice as big as we thought it was. Yeah. So we're taking you to Cherry Hill Park. It's in College Park, Maryland. It's about a 20-minute drive into downtown Washington, D.C. You heard me right. From the campground to downtown Washington, D.C. is only a 20-minute drive. It's the closest campground to the city. And for us, basically, it's become the only show in town when it comes to visiting Washington, D.C.
But before we tell you more about Cherry Hill Park, we want to thank our sponsor, Progressive. Did you know that adding your RV insurance with another Progressive policy like auto, motorcycle, or boat is a great way to save money when you're out there on the road seeing the sights? Call 1-800-PROGRESSIVE or visit progressive.com/RV to learn more. All right, let's dive into Cherry Hill Park. Now, a little bit of background for our listeners on this. First off, this is now our fourth time camping outside of the Washington, D.C. area. It is sort of a nearby long weekend getaway for us. And it's one of our favorite.
We have gone for two nights. We prefer to go for three or four.
And it's our favorite sort of, it's really one of our favorite family, short family vacations to make in our area. So
within 4 hours, there's nowhere else I'd rather be.
So we have a lot of other material on visiting the D.C. area, you know, on our podcast, and we'll point to some of those other resources.
Well, why don't we do that now?
We can do that.
So if you want to go back into the history of RVFTA, all the way back on episode 9, we did a podcast called American History for Beginners, and it talked about all the things we did in D.C., and we reviewed the Capitol KOA, which is about 40 minutes from downtown. Then if you go to episode number 65 of RV Family Travel Atlas, we did an episode called Opting Out in Washington, D.C. Again, we talked about a whole bunch of other stuff that we did in Washington. And then we did a smackdown between Cherry Hill and the Capitol KOA. But now we're going to do a full review of Cherry Hill Park because it sure does deserve it.
Yeah. And, you know, the bottom line is I think it really is. It deserves its reputation as being just a phenomenal base camp for exploring the D.C. area. So where is it? It is located in College Park, Maryland. So for those of you that are familiar with Washington, D.C., you know that it's sort of surrounded on all sides by other locations, right? So you're not actually going to be able to camp in Washington, D.C., but you can get pretty close to it by being in either Maryland or Virginia, okay? So this is in Maryland, and it's in College Park, Maryland. You have some things in that area if you wanted to do that too, if you wanted to explore
IKEA,
that.
IKEA, Starbucks.
We'll talk about that later. But it is really the closest you can get to downtown.
And because of its proximity to the city, there's just a something we want to get out of the way right here first, because we want to make sure we say it. The highway near it is loud. There is road noise.
The highways.
There's one really big highway right alongside the campground. So it is a noisy campground with road noise. Now, we love this campground despite the noise, because we just realized if you want to be 20 minutes from D.C., I mean, you're basically right outside of Washington. You're not going to get some bucolic country setting that's totally quiet. Now, we have all slept fine there.
Mm-hmm.
But if you are very sensitive to noise, you need to consider that. Now, last year, our spot was really close to the highway. It was very loud. So this year, I asked them to move me further from the highway. And I laughed at you.
Stephanie laughed. Let's be honest. Well, I was like, come on, that
you can
area,
hear the noise.
You're like, I want to be back. And I'm like, that's not back.
Well, they did move. They moved us, and it wasn't – I didn't think it was quite as loud, but it was still loud. Now, look, it's a huge campground with over 400 sites. There are areas that are quieter than other areas, but I don't have that wired. I couldn't say to you, oh, reserve this site because it's quiet, or reserve that site
because it's quiet. But they gave us a very nice – you called, you talked as per our advice. And we did feel that we got a site.
I was perfectly happy with our site.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We
but
were.
You're sitting around the campfire and you can hear the highway.
But it's kind of like you have to think of it like a waterfall because it's constant.
Well, so I do. When I'm lying in bed at night, that's part of the thing is it's so steady that it does. I fall right asleep and I don't wake up. I'm not a light sleeper, but if
you
you're a light sleeper, you need to consider that. Now, look, the Capitol KOA is 40 minutes away and there's also a highway alongside of that. So if you want to get this close to DC, this is just part of the deal. And we don't want someone showing up saying, oh, RVFTA said this place is amazing and it's so loud.
Yeah.
You know, we're telling you right up front, it's loud. So let's get past that and now talk about what an amazing campground
is. And people still love it because it's an awesome campground near one of our, obviously, one of our nation's treasures and a place that we honestly feel is one of the best family destinations in the country.
Well, it's very telling. If you go online and read reviews of this campground, most people just rave and write good reviews and they don't even mention the noise because you just kind of get past it because it's like, okay, I'm right outside of a major city in the world, you know, and that's just the deal you're making when you stay here. All right.
Yeah. So this is a Good Sam Park. So you can get your Good Sam discount when you're camping here. It is a family owned campground. And I think it's been in the family for like generations.
Well, it was a farm. The property was farmland.
And they initially let people stay there on the farm. It has a really like
– it has an interesting story. It's grown organically over the years. And it's a premier RV resort in America. It really is. And in fact, it's obvious that a lot of their resort facilities are probably 10 or 15 or 20 years old. And they keep adding new facilities. Mm-hmm. But to me, it's like they were probably way ahead of the curve on the whole resort campground situation.
That's true. And I also would like to add to that I don't feel like they've allowed any of their facilities to truly feel dated. Like you can see that some things may be in the process of being updated or maybe next in line for being updated. But I do feel like they keep everything. Like we were sitting there at our campsite and we're looking at the, you know, it's like the road and we're like, this is like, we're in the so close to the city, yet at the same time they managed to make this place feel like one of our friends that we were camping with was like, it's like sidewalks. There's sidewalks everywhere. There's trails. They really try to make it feel like a really nice place to be.
There's so much there.
Right.
So
anyway, this is, like we said, a very large campground with over 400 sites. It really is a good place to practice that, you know, important like habit of calling the campground and looking for a good reservation, because I feel like the sites vary very much in how much like sort of beauty or like – I don't want to say beauty because it's urban camping, but like kind of how nice the surroundings are,
We paid $80 a night for one of their more deluxe sites, and that was before the Good Sam discount. But we had table, chairs, outdoor grill, paved patio.
Yeah.
So and I like those back-end sites, those back-end deluxe sites. And that price, look, you know, the family we were with, we all kind of talked about it and said, you know, for 20 minutes to D.C., it's a solid price. It's not bad. But there are pull-throughs that we're not super impressed with there because they are so close together.
And they feel like you're parking in a parking lot.
And
I feel like the pull-through area has more of a parking lot feel.
They put a lot of the big Class A's there. And on some of those pull-through sites, like the fire ring is right at the tippy edge of the site. And it's like basically on the road. So that's not to say that all the pull-throughs aren't nice, but we have definitely noticed that we like the back end sights more. And I saw a couple Class A's next to each other where the awning was practically touching the RV. So our recommendation is go for the back ends and maybe even the deluxe back ends with the patio, the furniture, and the grill.
Now, if for ease of booking, you do not need to – you know, this is not one of those things where the reservation window opens, go on. But you have to understand that this campground is big and it gets jamming during like peak seasons. We only like to visit, and I'll just put an insider tip right now. DC is gorgeous in the spring and in the fall. I do not want to go. You know, if you don't know it, DC used to be a swamp. They actually drained
it. It can be hot and unpleasant in the summer. You know, a lot of our listeners might only be able to get there in the summer. For us, it is a great early spring and late fall destination because this campground's open year round.
Yeah.
So we can start our RV season in March by heading to DC, and we can end our RV season by going there in November or December, though we may be in the never ending RV camping season this year.
Yeah, we'll see. But I really think that March, April, even May, that they're fantastic times to visit DC. Obviously, March, you have the cherry blossoms, so it's going to be a lot busier. You have to look at that peak season. Don't expect to just show up during cherry blossom.
Oh, then you're going to need to book ahead.
Right, if you want to go during one of those times. And in the fall, again, I think September and October are a lovely time to visit this area. However, during the summer, they have all of the pool and they have a little splash area.
Two splash areas. Yeah. It's a nice place in the summer. People do like going there in the summer. By the way, open year-round, and there are full hookups year-round. They have heated water spigots there. So if your rig's not winterized or you're willing to unwinterize it and you want to go there in December or January, you can be hooked up to water.
Yeah,
so we were hooked up to water this past weekend.
We were. And if you don't want to hook up to the water because you're winterized, the bathhouses are beautiful. They really are.
Clean.
They're clean. They're big. They're spacious. They're heated. Like, you can comfortably use the bathhouses. And
they're empty. At this time of year, they're empty.
Yeah.
In the summer, they wouldn't
be. If you're going and when you're winterized, they're going to be.
Now, when
empty.
I say empty, there's 400 plus sites at this campground. There were a lot of people here over Thanksgiving weekend, but the campground is so large, it doesn't feel crowded at all.
That's true, because it's spread out and everybody sort of has a little bit of space and stuff. And so, you know, I do feel like if we were there during a time when it was like sold out, I'd be like, this is a city, you know. But
we were talking about that. I mean, if it indeed does become like sold out in the summer or near cherry blossoms, there's a lot of people there. Like, I could almost see there being like traffic getting in and out.
Traffic,
you know, because there's the one kind of one way in
and
one way
gated,
out.
And it's gated, which is very nice. So they do take security seriously at this campground. There is a security booth at the front. And then past the security booth, there's also gated entry that you need your card to get in and out. There's
a bus stop inside the campground for Washington, D.C. There is public transportation that comes into the campground and will take you right into the city.
Well, it'll take you to the metro. So this is a really important thing and a highlight for a lot of people. For us, we're still in that age where we like to just drive the truck into the city because it's not far away. And I'm going to tell you this. I've been going to the city for my entire life. Like, I can't tell you how old I was when I took my first day trip to Washington, D.C., because it's about 3 hours from where we live. So I have never... Everybody goes, oh, it's so hard to park. I have never once not been able to get a parking spot around the mall. And that
includes... There's been a couple times where it was dicey.
I don't know what that means, dicey. We found a spot. That includes the cherry blossom time last spring. We got a spot in the truck.
And parked
on the
our
mall.
Pickup truck.
Yeah. So we can get a spot. So I would prefer at this point with young kids just to be able to, like, I call it get in and out and nobody gets hurt. So, but if you want to use public transportation, the bus picks you up.
You see
at
RVers.
The campground.
Like, people come in, they unhitch, they get set up, and they walk up to the bus stop. I mean, people come here to get into the city, and a lot of the, you know, people that have come back many, many times have that bus wired.
And they sell the Metro cards in the camp store. So you can get your Metro cards in the camp store. You can take that bus right to the Metro. The Metro will take you right to the mall in the city. You do not have to drive in the city if you don't want to.
The huge, well-stocked camp store that really has two, like, it's almost two stores in one. There's like an RV parts store in there. And then it has your regular camp store with groceries and coffee. And they have newspapers. They have Trailer Life and Motorhome. I mean, it's a really nice camp store.
Yeah, they have a smoothly running operation. It just like everybody knows what they're supposed to do. The maintenance, you know, folks are cleaning up things. Like everybody's
it's like
just
being at a higher end hotel.
Yeah.
It's more run like a hotel.
And it's subtle, you know? It just feels like it's well oiled operation. So that's good. Now we mentioned the pool. The playground. I want to say this because I mentioned about, older facilities as opposed to new. The playground is not new. And they might be putting in a newer one, in the future. But I want to say it's well-maintained. And
it's
also, it's nice sized and spread out. I love it when playgrounds have, like, multiple pieces of equipment that are sort of spread out in a bigger area. And the kids kind of, like, really have room to play. This is not a brand spanking new playground. The kids love playing there. And they were playing there until the very last moment that we were there. And I had to pull them away to leave.
My mistake last year was to ask for a site next to the playground. And the playground's about as close to the highway as you can get. So don't be tempted into that if you want a little bit of a quieter site.
Yeah. Well, and our site this year, let's talk about it right now.
We were on the Rushmore Loop. And we were actually on site 326. I thought it was a very nice site.
I
see any nicer sites per se.
No, we liked it. I think I liked that area when we first pulled in. I thought the bathhouses are right behind it.
But not right behind it.
Like down a little hill.
Right. Then there's another row of sites and it's there.
But the lights are bright enough because, like I said, this is a campground that takes security very seriously because this is urban camping. So I was like, ooh, are the lights of the bathhouse too bright? But it didn't bother me. We're in a travel trailer. If you're in a pop-up or something, it might be a little too bright by a bathhouse. And you might say, put me away from a bathhouse. I don't know. But it was fine for us. So, and I also liked the fact that it was really near to the playground without being right on top of it.
Yeah,
so.
And we were on Yosemite Lane last year, which, like I was saying, is pretty darn close to the road. There are some other areas that might be quieter. And some of the pull-through sites that we said we didn't like as much are further away from the road. So like I said, if you're sensitive to noise, call them and just really try to talk to them and say, where's the quietest place I can be?
All right. So now we said there's the pool. I talked about the playgrounds. But let's talk about like the sort of game room and snack bar area. Because one of the reasons why we think that this campground just blows it out of the water is the facilities. I mean,
yeah, they call it the conference center, but it's like a clubhouse for the campers. It was so nice this weekend. So you go in, they have their own little restaurant there. And when I say restaurant, it's sort of like a grill. And there's a hot tub in there that's open year-round. There's a lounge room.
A sauna. Mm-hmm.
There's a sauna as well. There's a really large lounge room with sofas and chairs and a television and a fish tank and books and magazines and games and movies. And so we had friends come to the campground, and it was a little kind of cold and blustery, and the kids got a little bit cold out at the playground. We all went into this room and just kind of hung out, and there's air hockey. There's some video games. It's like you can actually if it was a rainy day, you'd be good to go in here.
Yeah. So I brought in snacks and the adults and the kids ended up eating all the snacks. But like basically like in the common room, we like had it on the table and I had some crackers and cheese and chips and everything. And then the kids are all over there.
And we spent $20 on air hockey.
The kids are all over there playing the games and we could sit and talk a little bit. And there's two aquariums.
There's a fireplace there.
Like, yeah.
Very clean laundry facilities in there.
Mm-hmm.
Clean bathrooms in there.
Yeah.
It just, if you're there in the winter where you might not be wanting to spend as much time outside, this is a nice place to be able to escape your RV.
Go read a book there or something easily.
If we didn't have kids, I'd walk over there with a book
just
and
read a book, get a change of pace. So really nice facilities like that. And there was also like a wedding going on in another section.
Well, upstairs there's a ballroom and they do weddings there. They also have a gym. Now, Grant, it's not huge.
I would call it like a fitness room. Yeah.
And it's in a separate building. It looks totally nice, right? Mm-hmm. If you wanted to work out, you could do that there. The rumor is, and I think it's more than rumor, they are going to build an indoor pool.
Right.
At some point in the next few years, that'll be amazing and just make this place even better for that year-round winter camping.
Well, then it's going to be for anybody that's our listener that's like within driving distance. This is going to be the place where, you get those weird, mild weekends.
Hop in and head to Cherry Hill Park.
You're going to be like, we're going there. We're going to do a little DC and we're going to swim in the indoor pool. Bam. That's a fantastic weekend right there. So that'll really, I think, take this place up another notch when that happens.
Yeah, there's bathhouses all over the place. There's a huge tent camping area. And if you had a Boy Scout troop or something like that, or if you were tent camping, again, you're going to hear the road. But it's really woodsy and beautiful. It's very nice.
Now, I also want to say they have very nice cabins. And our girl camper, Janine Pettit, actually stayed in one of those cabins last year when she came at the same time that we were there last fall. Really, really beautiful cabins with full kitchen, separate rooms, you know, like the deluxe kind of cabins. Now, why I want to say that is because for some of our listeners, you may be far away from D.C., but this might be on your bucket list for a must-visit
place.
And
I also heard in that indoor pool, but like they might actually build a lodge where they're on the cusp of what a lot of the larger RV parks are doing.
So if you are coming to this area and you don't know where to stay and you might not have your RV or something, but you know you're addicted to the campground experience like so many of us with RVs are, this is a good place to stay in a cabin too. You can meet people here, right? So we've done that with people. You don't have an RV, but we do. Come to Cherry Hill Park because we can park RV. You can get a cabin and it's the perfect place to meet with friends. We have always been at this park with other people and it works really well.
Very nice dog runs for Maggie. There's two. And there's it's like Stephanie said, there's a trail that loops around the park. So you can go on a nice long walk with the dog and take them to the dog run. Very, very nice. And so there's pretty much everything here that any campground could have, they have.
Yep. So this, you know, when we did our campground smackdown, we were in between. We were still. I think we both picked Cherry Hill Park because we were just like the proximity to the city can't be beat.
Unless you want to combine a trip to Annapolis and DC, then you might look at the Capital KOA because it's close to Annapolis. But if you're about DC, this is the place.
This was our second time visiting the Cherry Hill Park, and we've been at the Capital KOA two times now. And I could say we were leaving today, and we said, this is our spot.
Partly because we've done Annapolis. We have no real desire to go back to Annapolis anytime soon because Annapolis is small and it's awesome, but we've done it.
Yeah.
So for now, we're going back to see DC when we go back, and it will be Cherry Hill Park for us.
Yeah, this is a fantastic campground. Now, we have covered a lot of things to do in the DC area already, but when we come back, we're kind of going to give an overview of how to navigate planning a DC vacation, and we're going to talk about some of the highlights of this trip.
How about Nobody's Perfect?
Oh, I'm sorry.
I mean, we hit a few things.
Oh, we did. Okay. I thought camper. All right. Road noise. What else? Go ahead.
Road noise is the big thing. I don't blame. I'm not even going to call that Nobody's Perfect because I can't fix it. I like to point out things that are fixable. I really think that some of the pull-through sites are too shallow. They're too. They're not wide enough.
So expand, maybe even do like the patio sites.
Well, there's 400 plus sites. Yeah. You know, a couple of those pull-throughs should be one site.
Okay. So I like that. And I'm also going to say, because you stopped me, I'm going to jump in and I'm going to say another accolade for them is that the Wi-Fi at our site, I think I was near a repeater.
Cracking, ripping.
Zippy.
Zippity-doo-dah.
Zippy. So on our site by that bathhouse, I think there was a repeater there and the Wi-Fi was awesome. Helped us get that gear guide right up.
Lots of international travelers there too.
Yeah.
I met a nice couple from Germany
there. Well, because if you're traveling internationally, you want to see DC. So great. This is a fantastic place.
Magnificent city. So we're going to come back in a second. We're going to talk about the things we did in DC on this trip. We are in no way going to try to give you a comprehensive view of everything there is to do in DC, but you can check our other two podcasts for that. This time we're going to talk about what we did on this trip, so stay tuned. Fun and family. It's what Jayco has been focused on for generations. From the first camping trailer that rolled off the production line on founder Lloyd Bontrager's farm in 1968 to today, when Jayco, now the world's largest privately owned RV manufacturer, is building everything from camping trailers up to gas Class A motorhomes.
With a blend of old world Amish craftsmanship and innovative technology, Jayco builds more value into their RVs than any other manufacturer in the industry, with more standard features and the best 2-year warranty offered. Visit Jayco's website at jayco.com or your closest Jayco dealer for more information. Jayco, generations of family fun.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. We just gave you a great review of Cherry Hill Park, and we sure do love this place. It was our second trip there. We really plan on going back again soon. Now we want to talk about what we did in Washington, D.C. on this trip.
Before we go into that, though, I do want to give a note about planning activities in D.C. So for those of you that are going, I want you to realize that we pretty much, when we go, we think about the mall, right, which is where all the monuments are, and anything that we want to see on the mall. We think about the Smithsonians.
Which are all free.
Right. And the very many Smithsonians, I think there's 13 or something Smithsonians that are available. And then we think about the other category, right? And what we do every time we go is we think, what are the highlights that we're going to hit this time? And we very much like think age appropriate for our kids. Now, I want to say this because if you don't go over and listen to the other episodes, I want you to know this. You must get certain timed tickets in advance. So please, if your heart is set on a few things, going to the top of the Washington Monument, visiting the White House, visiting the Capitol building, right? Or one of the newer things, right? Like the Ford's Theater isn't new, but the African American Museum that we'll talk about is.
You don't assume you're going to get to go to these things without advance tickets.
We got timed tickets for the Washington Monument last year back in September, and they sell out. We got this year the timed tickets for the African American Museum. They sell out.
Yeah, so let's dive in. The talk of the town, the toast of the town is the new Smithsonian Museum, the African American Museum of History and Culture, and it is not easy to get in. We got our tickets 2 months in. I read somewhere that, you know, it was hard to get in, so we got our tickets 2 months in advance. This museum is absolutely magnificent. It is my favorite thing now in Washington, D.C. We spent 4 hours there, and I can't wait to go back because we didn't even see two of the six floors.
Right, because we obviously were there with the kids, and this is, I mean, not like a kid museum. They got a lot out of it, and they really did well and soldiered through.
There are people that were spending 12-hour days
but,
there.
Right. If you know, as an adult, you really want it to read everything and really just immerse yourself in the exhibits. They did a phenomenal job conceptually with this museum. You go in, and this is why it's a time ticket, because they want to like space out the crowds. So you go in and you actually get on an elevator and you go down.
You descend underground.
Yeah.
Like metaphorically into the bowels of a slave ship.
Oh my gosh. So you go down, I think it's four levels?
There's three levels below ground.
Okay.
And you start at the bottom, and then it tells the story of African Americans in America chronologically from the slave ships coming over. And on that bottom floor, that lowest floor, there are artifacts from slave ships.
Yeah.
And you go through this room that you feel like you're in the hold of a slave
absolutely.
Ship. I mean, it's intense.
It is dark. It is quiet. And it is it is intense. And the boys were okay. They have actually signs outside of some of the things that are more sensitive material. They kind of put in these little alcoves, and then they have a sign there that says, like, this may be, you know, difficult.
And that worked
material.
Really well for us.
Yeah, so
right?
We could kind of pass by that with the kids.
And we weren't sugarcoating things with our kids. I mean, we were letting them confront this history. But like, for instance, on one of the upper floors, like the room about the Ku Klux Klan, it said, you know, you might not want to take younger kids in there. And you know,
and
talking about slavery is challenging enough. And like the Ku Klux Klan thing was just like, we did not want to go there.
I didn't want them to see the images.
The imagery too. Yeah with so 7-year-olds and a 3-year-old.
Move along.
It's clearly marked, which is nice.
Yeah. So you go through and then you kind of like ascend through the Declaration of Independence. Right. And wow, did they do such a good job at showing like, okay, the Declaration of Independence was not so much of a Declaration of Independence for, you know, the slaves.
Well,
in
the statue
country.
Of Jefferson was very striking because behind him, there's a brick for every slave he owned with the slave's name on it. And it was over 300 or 400 slaves.
I thought it was 600. Yeah.
There's a wall of bricks behind him. But the story is told so eloquently and it moves chronologically. And you really do feel the sweep of history as you go through those bottom three floors, which work their way all the way up through the civil rights movement.
Yeah. So then you go through and you go to a lunch counter room, which I felt was like the most powerful.
It tells the story of Greensboro.
Yeah. So there was a lunch counter. There's all this like imagery from the protests and all of that of the civil rights movement in that room. There was a train car that showed like segregated seating, and that's still a work in progress, that thing. But the kids like looking at it. It was just, I don't know. There was enough that had them. Oh, there was also the story of the African-American troops, right, that fought in the different wars.
Well,
that was really emphasized a lot.
And the early African-American towns during Reconstruction.
Oh, they had the cabins for these. That was very
I didn't know much about that history at all.
You're right. I learned a lot about that while we were there, and have these different towns popped up all over the country, especially, well, in the South too, but in the North, where they basically just made their own economic system that function very independently, like from the world outside.
Yeah.
So that is this chronological, you know, area. And like we said, then you rise to above ground. And then it's like once you pass the civil rights movement, it's so interesting conceptually because like then you're above ground. Then you're operating, like then African Americans have finally made it to a version of equality, right? And you're above ground. It was amazing conceptually.
Well, and what was beautiful to me is that the top floor of the building is all about African American culture.
Right.
So that the contributions to music, the contributions to television, the contributions to film, mm-hmm. The creation of jazz, the blues. And it's lovely to me that that's the top floor. The elevated.
And it was vibrant and energetic. And positive. Yeah.
The thing that amazed me about this museum is that it opened fully formed. This is not a work in progress.
Yeah.
This is not a museum that needs to be finished or needs to be worked on for the next 10 years to become a grand testament to the African American experience. It was born fully formed.
I say like 10 times bravo. I think they did a phenomenal job from the outside to the inside. Just everything about it felt, I'm just going to like say, on point. Like it was like there, it wasn't, you know, like some people walk away and they go, oh, they were trying to be over political. It was like history, man.
It brought the story to life.
It just
brought everything to life. I mean, absolutely. And by the way, the food was good. I mean, I almost feel like silly saying it,
but
the cafeteria was awesome.
But it was conceptual too. So what they did in the cafeteria was they actually took the sort of the heritage of African American cooking in different
regions.
Country. So they did the Low Country. They did the Creole cooking.
Ate in the Low Country, right?
Yeah. So you could go. Of course, we did because we can't get enough of our Low Country food. But you know, you can go to the different counters and you can get, you know, and they have offerings that celebrate those African American culinary traditions. So I love that they did that too. And it was good food. I mean,
it was very good food.
It wasn't
like cheap or anything, but I didn't feel like we were being ripped off food wise. Now I could go back tomorrow. I could go back next week.
I mean, yeah. And fact, I told my friend, go and don't bring your kids.
It would have been, I love taking the boys.
Yeah. And
because they really got into it and they bought a book about Frederick Douglass. And I think it was a real enriching experience for them. I would like to go back without them, to be honest, just to really soak it in, to read more. And the next time we go back to DC, it's the top of my list for our next trip to DC. So it's somebody texted me or messaged me on social media and said, oh, is it as good as the hype? And I said, no, it's better than the hype. And I said, my expectations were pretty high because I've read a lot about it.
Oh, yeah.
And this exceeded my expectations. It was perfectly
executed. And we were lucky. We were like experiencing a sold out, thing, because it's not like anybody else could just walk in that day. Like we had, nailed tickets for this.
It was amazing. The power is in the narrative. Compared to other Smithsonians that I've been to, where there's a million different things going on at once, this is telling a story from beginning.
It takes you on a journey.
From the beginning to the present.
Yeah. So very good. Definitely in advance, get the tickets to that. Now, the next thing we did, we felt like our boys were at the perfect age, and another historical event, kind of thematic too, was we did the Ford's Theater finally.
Now, you've never done it.
I did years ago.
I don't even know if I did my eighth grade trip to Washington.
But it was so different because they redid it all, that it was a very different experience when I went through the last time. It was totally different. So now they've really redone the whole museum area.
Well, there's a museum in the basement, and they give you 45 minutes in the museum, and there's an entire education there about Lincoln, about the assassination, about the conspirators. you know, I'd read Team of Rivals last year. It's one of my favorite books I've ever read. And I read Manhunt about the search for John Wilkes Booth. And it brought all of that to life in a really interesting way. Lots of short videos down there. A gift shop down there that the boys pulled me into.
Okay, so I felt like the museum, like, beware, get ready to kind of navigate your way through it. Because when I went down there, I didn't know which way to go.
It was not
it wasn't laid out.
Yeah, it was not chronological.
So
it was circular.
It took us a little while, and the kids were like, oh, can we go here and can we go there? And so we were kind of getting dragged all over the place. But there's a lot there. So if you can focus, because there's the conspirator room, and I learned so
we
much.
We spent so much time in the conspirator room.
And then there was like the Frederick Douglass room, which had a really good video that the kids really got into. And you just have to, I think, focus a little in the museum because they didn't do a good job at like leading you through it. You kind of get dumped in there and you're like, oh, where do I go?
Because they bring the entire group down. Mm-hmm. And if everyone was to walk through it chronologically, I don't know that that would work either. So everyone just gets to mill around.
So
it's unorganized.
I don't know. It took me a little while to get my bearings.
But it was
still very cool. After the talk, I could have gone back into the museum then. But then you go through into the theater and you get a great Ranger talk.
Yeah, the Ranger-led talk was about half an hour. There was – you're sitting right in the theater where Lincoln was assassinated. I mean, you can look right up at the presidential booth, and it's a very small, charming theater. And, I mean, you are as close to history as you can possibly get. You're sitting in the seats of history. And the half-an-hour talk was great, and the Ranger that gave us the talk made it very suspenseful, and he went through the conspirators and the hours leading up to the assassination and told that story in a really interesting way. And look – it's hard teaching the boys about this stuff. I mean, there are challenges to our history is complicated and there's some dark passages in our history. And we've taught them that he was this amazing president. And it's very sad to them that he was killed. But we wanted them to learn about it and go to Ford's Theater. And I think they really did enjoy it and learn an awful lot.
I think they were old enough and they did. I think they walked away with a lot. And we'll probably revisit it like years from now when they're just even at another level. So
Cozy. We went to Cozy for lunch just because it was close and convenient. Perfectly good right around the corner. And then Pete's Coffee right around the corner. Grab a coffee at Pete's afterwards. Really awesome coffee right around the corner. You can walk there.
All right. So what was our other big experience this
time?
Our
third day, we did the Newseum. I have wanted to do the Newseum since the Newseum opened. I had some concerns it wouldn't be great for the boys. I'm not sure it was great for the boys. Theo said he really liked it. They were not as captivated by it as they were by Ford's and the African American. You and I were pretty blown away by the Newseum.
This is a phenomenon. Now, let me say that this is not a Smithsonian. So this is one of the few ticketed, you know, pay ticket that you are going to find. And it's not inexpensive. So it was over $20. I think it was $22 for an adult ticket, $13.95 for six and up. For over six. Six and under are free.
So it was $60, $70.
It was pricey for us to go there. But I really felt like it was worth it for us. I loved the displays. I thought the displays were perfect. So you would walk up and write, you know, in a museum, it's always like, is the balance between the visual and the reading good, right? Like, do you kind of like get it without having to sit there and read these small plaques to understand it? I thought that their visuals were phenomenal, and I just loved it. I loved it. I loved everything about this place. What I wish they would do, and this is like my tip to museums like this, you don't have to be a children's museum, but if they had those little ear, you know, those little like audio earpieces.
Maybe they did.
The audio tour. No, I asked.
Okay.
So if they had those for kids, right? And they had a kid version of the story in like the First Amendment area. I love that First Amendment display was awesome. Like talking about all the different pieces of the First Amendment. So educational. They had like, you know, you walk into that room and there's like a kid there. They have that little handheld audio thing and they can hit one, you know, and they could get a kid's version of First Amendment talk. They would have been riveted. Or they could go to like the Edward Morrow.
I frankly almost don't care that it's maybe not for them. Not every museum has to be.
No, but what I'm saying is I hate the idea. This is what they had. They had one section that was for kids. My
and
point
had, like, the video
being,
game-y kind of stuff.
Right, like touch screen, blah, blah, blah.
Actually, it was kind of cool.
fine. But I hate the fact that we have this separation, right? Like the museum has to have a kids area and an adult area. I wish what they did was make some sort of kid version of the room that you as an adult are in. So a kid could kind of hear a little bit of a talk like Brain Pop. Any parents out there listening to this, if you've got kids in elementary school, you know about Brain Pop. And kids love those silly Brain Pop things. And it's not rocket science to make a Brain Pop. You have this like adult and a little robot talking about something and the kids listen. They could do the same exact thing for every room in that museum and the kids would have been riveted and then we would have gotten to read everything.
Now, that's Stephanie what I'm said saying. The exhibits were excellent. I just want to mention too that it blew me away. On the first floor, they have a gallery sponsored by Nikon, which I was thrilled because I'm a Nikon shooter, of Pulitzer Prize-winning photography. And that room was amazing. It was real. I cried in that room looking at some of these
stories
behind these Pulitzer Prize-winning photographs.
Mind-blowing.
Stunning photography, gripping photography, very emotional photography, whether it's the Vietnam War or conflicts overseas or Babe Ruth retiring, whatever. You know, there's so many different types of photographs over the years that have won the Pulitzer. Then they had a room on the media and the press, the free press during the American Revolution that I thought was also excellent. And it got into how contentious and lively the media and newspapers were during the American Revolution. So those two exhibits were awesome. Everything about this place was really, really tremendous.
It was. It was great. You have to know, though, that you have to decide this is going to be our payment.
The Smithsonian spoil you.
Right,
this was normal price for a museum. Right. But people go to Washington and they're like, oh, that one's not free, you know, because there's so many that are. Mm-hmm. But this, you know, look, I believe in supporting places like this. Yeah. And I didn't really have a big problem
paying for
it.
Especially if you have tweens and teens, this would be a phenomenal place to take your kids. So much education here.
I think journalism matters.
Yeah.
You know, newspapers matter. They're good for our country. Thomas Jefferson said, I'd rather live in a country with newspapers and no government than government and no newspapers. I'll let you chew on that one.
There was a lot of great quotes throughout the museum of things like that. So, you know, it was definitely top three experiences. We've got every year we go and we do different things with our kids. We show them different monuments to listen to all of our prior stuff. I'll link to them in the show notes over at campgroundoftheweek.com. And you can go and you can see all of the other episodes and, you know, get our list up. You can also see this is one of our destinations in our book, The Idiot's Guide to RV Vacations. So we also picked Washington, D.C., and we picked things to do there.
D.C. is one of the great American RV trips, partly because you can get so close at a place like Cherry Hill Park, and partly because there are just so many things to do in Washington, D.C. for kids, for families, for adults, for retirees. I don't care who you are. It is a grand and magnificent city.
And thank you so much to DC for hosting us once again for a phenomenal holiday abroad away from our house. And then also thank you to our sponsor, Progressive Insurance. When you sign up for an RV policy, you can also sign up for total loss replacement, which is optional protection that replaces your new RV with a current model if it's declared a total loss in the first 2 years. Get a quote by calling 1-800-PROGRESSIVE or visiting progressive.com/RV.
And a huge thank you to Jayco. To view their complete line of RVs, head on over to Jayco.com and check out all the 2017 units that are in stock at dealers all across the country. We'll see all of you at the campground.
See you at the campground.
Thank you so much for tuning in to RVFTA's Campground of the Week.
Links to the campground and regional attractions can be found in the show notes at campgroundoftheweek.com.
And don't forget to check out the other podcasts in our network.
RV Family Travel Atlas is hosted by yours truly, Jeremy and Stephanie Puglisi, and available every Friday morning.
And Girl Camper, Going Places, Doing Things, is hosted by Janine Pettit and released every Tuesday morning.
Join us next Thursday for another great review from our team of campground correspondents who will inspire you to hit the open road and explore America the Beautiful.